Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. Although legislation, policies and practices have been aiming to prevent or at least minimise workplace discrimination for decades, this is still a very live issue. We need only look at the headlines, the WRC case reports and the various survey findings to discover that although there is so much being done, there is so much more that needs to be done. So talk to us today about exactly that. We're delighted to be joined again by our very own Megan Power, HR consultant here at Insight HR. Thanks for joining us again, Megan. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Brilliant stuff. Looking forward to the chat. And as always, we're joined by our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. How are you, Mary?
I'm great, thanks, Owen.
Brilliant. So I might actually come to yourself, Mary, first, if that's all right, because I suppose as many of our regular listeners know, we do like to start with a bit of a kind of a context setter to, I suppose, set the tone for the conversation and to, I suppose, discuss the scale of the issue. I suppose the question for yourself, Mary, to kick us off, is there any types of workplace discrimination that you see happening regularly, kind of more than most, or is it, unfortunately, I think I know the answer here, quite prevalent across the board?
Unfortunately, Owen, it's quite prevalent across the board, and I'd love to be on the podcast this morning saying, it's very rare or occasional, but that actually isn't the case. And we see that through the news, we see that in our society in general. And for our listeners here today, obviously, we're going to be talking about the workplace, but we see it specifically in the workplace as well. We know there are categories of employees who are especially protected by the law under the Employment Equality Act 1998 to 2015. Under every heading. So whether we look at race, you think about riots in Dublin, you think about immigration, you think about the influx of different races and religions into Ireland and into the workplace. And yeah, we're continuing to see discrimination in those areas in the workplace as well. Gender, of course, we're seeing discrimination. We talked last week with Adrian Toomey about maternity leave discrimination. Hard to believe after 50 years of legislation in place to protect that group of people. But we do see it also in relation to other areas such as sexual harassment in the workplace, which can affect men and women. We see it around transgender rights in around gender assignment and gender recognition. We see issues around LGBTQ+. We see issues around being a member of the travelling community and what those people might experience in the workplace. Disability, of course, always ongoing issues there. And there's a plethora of case law constantly in the media, in around disability. Age, always a bit of an issue. And as we were just discussing before we started recording here, it's unlikely in the future that we're going to see mandatory retirement ages. And we see more and more case law coming through in and around retirement and people being forced to retire before they're ready to do so. Family status and civil status. So look on, not to depress our listeners, but we do continue to see this on an ongoing basis. And it's something that, as I've said many times before on this podcast, my mother was well ahead of her time as a young person in Ireland, really strongly and passionately believed in social justice and equality and fairness for everyone, and actually fought quite hard back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, for those kind of equal rights specifically for women, but always encompassed a very broad range of people. And, you know, I think she'd be really disheartened. She died 7 years ago, but she'd be really disheartened, I think, today to see what happened in Dublin only recently, to see the level of vitriol towards people who are vulnerable coming from war-torn countries or who are in need of our asylum. And, you know, I think it's a sad state of affairs. And we in HR have to be really conscious of our systems, our processes, our practices, who we prevent coming into the workplace, how we treat people when they are in the workplace, whether we're treating them differently when they come into the workplace. And look, the list is endless. We're also seeing a huge amount about neurodiversity these days, an emerging area of discrimination. And again, it's one of those things that I'm sure Megan is about to join me in a long list of what she has seen herself and what she hears on a day-to-day in the work that she does too.
Definitely. And we're going to dig a little bit deeper into that actually. And I think, I suppose, as you're speaking there, Mary, I'm not long in agreement, but also with that kind of disheartening nod as well. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. Many of our listeners will be in full agreement, unfortunately, of what they see and what they witness and that kind of stuff, and maybe even feel themselves. So again, an important one to open with. I suppose, Megan, yeah, perfect segue onto the question for you. I mean, when it comes to preventing, reducing the chances of discrimination in the workplace, are there some kind of touch points or potentially problem areas, Megan, that you've seen that HR teams should kind of keep an eye on just to, I suppose, mitigate the chances here?
Yeah, I think as Mary said, it's such a huge area, certainly so vast that we won't cover off everything in a podcast. I mean, you're talking about all the grounds for discrimination as outlined in the Employment Equality Act, as Mary went through, and then the breadth of an employee's journey while they're employed with an employer. There's so many unfortunate opportunities for discrimination to show itself. I think one of the ones I'd like to touch on, because I think it's the starting point of discrimination in a lot of organizations, but one that is unfortunately still very much prevalent in 2004 Ireland, is that of recruitment and hiring practices. And, you know, I do think some organisations work off the untrue narrative that since a candidate isn't yet employed, their rights in terms of bringing a claim under the Employment Equality Act doesn't exist, when in fact the EEA does provide for recourse for claims of discrimination in recruitment practices. And I suppose discrimination in recruitment and hiring, you could look at it as being twofold. So both in terms of looking to prevent discriminatory decision making and bias in the process itself, but further to that, creating the job opportunity from the start so that it attracts and is inclusive of candidates of all backgrounds. And some examples, just so that we're not all doom and gloom, some examples of how you might look to go about that is ensuring that your job advertisements are inclusive and avoid language that may deter certain groups. Implement blind recruitment techniques where possible to try and reduce bias. Train, and I know we'll touch on this more in this podcast, but train hiring managers on things like unconscious bias awareness and equitable hiring practices. And, you know, implement monitoring measures on diversity metrics throughout the recruitment process to try and identify any disparities. In short, if you're not an inclusive hirer, you aren't going to be an inclusive workplace. And moreover, organizations are going to be missing out on key and top talent if they're implementing discriminatory practices. Recruitment obviously isn't the only problem area, as we've already noted. And I think one that kind of comes hand in hand with it, though, is performance management practices. Because if your hiring managers are showing bias in their recruitment practices, that is going to translate into the performance management process as well.
Mm, definitely. And it is such an important one. And I think it's a great one to cover as well, Megan, because you're right. It does kind of set the tone. If there's discrimination from the start, it's not going to exactly get better as somebody comes into the company. So that's a good one to cover, and absolutely right again that there's so much we could cover. I suppose, Mary, again, not to be Jim McGlynn, but I think this is an important question as well. If, I suppose, what can happen, Mary, if workplace discrimination kind of goes unnoticed, or worse, is actually accepted and ignored? And I know this is hopefully the minority of people we're talking about here, but or organizations that we're talking about, but what can happen if it's just kind of let happen?
Well, I mean, there's such a range of things that can happen on in terms of poor treatment of individuals. So, you know, being passed over for promotions, like Megan talks about, not being able to even get in the door of an organization. That's a huge factor, isn't it? To exclude people. But in the workplace, not getting training opportunities, not getting promotional opportunities, being othered, you know, different to everybody else, separate to everybody else, not included, and worse, targeted by people who don't like you by virtue of your difference. And that is, I suppose, by and far the biggest problem. Being overlooked, not having opportunities, not being treated fairly in the workplace and being separated from others. You know, how difficult is that for a human being who's coming to work to make their living like everybody else, to pay their bills, to you know, have a good and happy life? That's what people are doing when they come to work. Unfortunately, we see the very ugly side of discrimination in our, not just on our HR services side where Megan works, you know, dealing with the day-to-day issues that arise, but also on the investigation side. And the investigation side is where we see where things have got entirely out of hand in an organization, where somebody might be specifically targeted because they're different to others, whether that's on race, religion, gender, membership of the traveling community, disability, age, whatever it might be. And in those circumstances, if people are safe to do so, they raise their hand and raise an issue, make a complaint. But that's very, very difficult for people to do. And we know when it comes to things like bullying, harassment, sexual harassment, all of these areas are actually underreported in the workplace, where people experience these kind of behaviors and actions towards them. But these go unreported because people, the systems, the processes, the management culture, the culture of the business generally supports poor behavior towards others. And, you know, the options then for people are around leaving a job for another job, which is, you know, the better route than leaving a job for no job, which we sometimes see, or making a complaint and actually being further traumatized through the kind of processes that are in place, not being believed by the management team maybe making someone an enemy because they've made a complaint and then being seen as a troublemaker, or the process itself being very onerous, prolonged, difficult, and at the end of the day, nothing really resolved for the individual anyway. You know, I'm very much a believer in prevention is better than cure. Ensure your, you know, dignity at work policy is robust. Ensure that you're training your management team, like Megan says, around things like unconscious bias in your recruitment practices. But actually, what's the lived experience for individuals? I had a very interesting discussion with someone I know about a late diagnosis of autism in life, and the feeling of being othered as soon as it was mentioned to the manager of that particular individual, and what that felt like from you know, being exactly the same person, the same performer who'd asked for certain things in the role and not been provided with them before, but following that disclosure, being othered and being treated differently than that person had been treated before. And I thought it was a very interesting example of just the really, really subtle ways in which people are treated differently, whether that's because you're a single parent who discloses that to a manager who has a problem with it for some reason, or a colleague who's a problem with it for some reason, race, religion, whatever, age, whatever it might be. You know, it's important that you're clear with your employees, with your managers, what is and isn't acceptable in the workplace, and what kind of culture you actually want to exist. And that comes through training, awareness, support.
100%. And we know, and at the very least, we hope that many of our listeners, the vast majority of HR teams, employers, would want to go that prevention route instead of cure route and try to, I suppose, mitigate things happening. I suppose, as Mary said there, Megan, training. So can we talk a little bit about training for a second? I know this is something that we're going to talk about heavily in tomorrow's webinar with Siobhan Sweeney and Christabel Feeney as well, about training. Can you talk to us a little bit about just how important this is? And again, I suppose building on what should we be discussing, who should we be training? And again, talking about things like unconscious bias, just some general thoughts about digging deeper into the whole training piece.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if staff aren't trained, you know, in many senses, how can they be aware? And you're looking at things like your dignity at work training, which when broken down has different employees have different needs in terms of that training. And we provide, I suppose, so many different levels. So you've got like your generalist awareness training for all staff so that they're informed and educated on the dignity at work policy and understand what's expected. What constitutes, you know, harassment within the workplace and the consequences of breaching the policy and reporting mechanisms, to looking to, I suppose, build on that for training managers and ensuring, you know, that they're not only aware, but in their position as a, you know, as a leader, I suppose, have the ability to handle complaints as they arise. And then there's other types of training that are important, you know, investigator training, so that you have someone equipped to investigate allegations should they arise. And also, you know, if you choose to have a designated contact support person in an organization, it's a very positive thing to do, training them up so that they understand their role within the scope of the policy. Also looking at separately, you know, introducing unconscious bias training to focus awareness on the unconscious biases that we all might hold, which can influence our perceptions, our decisions, and our behaviors. We all have unconscious bias. There is no getting away from that. But by understanding and addressing that, we can learn to recognize and mitigate the impact of those biases, you know, in our working lives. And with managers as well, you want to be able to support them to create that supportive environment, train them to have the tools and the resources to address discrimination proactively. And they're going to be a key driver in fostering that supportive environment where organizations, where employees feel comfortable reporting incidences and seeking assistance. And in, I suppose, organizations where there is a HR function, and I know we have a few HR listeners out there, you know, it goes a step above that then for HR professionals. They need to be adept at policy development. They need to be able to develop these policies so that they're compliant with the codes of practice and the legislation, and that they're effective and bespoke to their organizations, and that they're applied and lived across the organization. They're going to have responsibility, you know, largely around making sure the staff are trained in regards to dignity at work and unconscious bias and everything like that. And, you know, they have a role in regards to other preventative measures that could be put in place as well. So there's a lot when we look at training this area, there is a lot, but that's why Insight HR is here, and we're able to support in identifying and pinpointing what trainings organizations need.
Yeah, it was for support on any of those pieces. I suppose, Mary, then, I suppose we have spoken about the prevention, as rightfully so. We do like to talk about the prevention way more than the cure. But if we might just talk about the cure for a second, Mary, if workplace discrimination does occur, I suppose, how do we manage it? And I know, obviously, there's the investigation piece, but there's things around kind of corrective action, spotting the gaps, that kind of future-proofing piece as well, Mary, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think Megan did a good job of kind of outlining how that can be done. You know, I don't think you can underestimate the importance of senior level support for an inclusive environment, because really it starts there. And in HR, I think it's really important to use your influencing skills to ensure that, you know, bias isn't prevalent at the senior levels of an organization. So, you know, for instance, it's very interesting in our work, we see lots of different employers and environments. And, you know, while there are great moves forward to increase diversity in terms of female representation on boards and at senior management level and in leadership roles, you know, we're not seeing all the other categories really there up at that senior level either, are we? You know, if we think about it, and, you know, always I would push forward on you know, women and women in the workplace and equality and all of that. But let's not forget the other protected categories of employees. And, you know, really, if as an organization you wish to be inclusive, we have to look at what is the construct of our management team? What's the construct of our leadership team? What's our board look like? You know, what are we? What are our values? And how representative are we of our own workforce, even at the most senior levels? And you do unfortunately see in lots of organizations, while at the lower levels you might have quite a diverse group of people, as we get higher in an organization, as we get into the more senior roles, they are still predominantly male, white, able-bodied, you know, and that is just a fact. And I think we've a lot of work to do to equalize and give people fair opportunities. So I'm not talking about giving people opportunities they don't deserve. I'm talking about fair opportunity for people to progress their careers to the most senior levels in organizations, irrespective of who they are, what they look like, how different they are to everybody else. And I think that's a key piece in terms of a genuinely inclusive workplace culture. And look, there are some incredible examples of organizations who get this bang on. And then there's organizations out there that, you know, talk a talk, have certain ad hoc programs out there, but, you know, you really do need to look at, well, what are we spending our money on? How impactful are we really? If we have our employee resource groups, are they adequately resourced? Are they equitably resourced? You know, what do we have, and how are we listening to them? And how are we using them? And is it really pushing forward equality in the organization? And are we really an organization that walks the talk that we preach? And I think organizations have a little bit of work to do there. We only need to look at the gender pay gap reports to see the true picture that actually emerges. And it's a little bit depressing, I think, sometimes when you're a woman. I look at these sometimes and I think, oh, have we really not moved that much further? I thought we had. I thought, from what I hear out there, the great work that I hear HR practitioners do, sometimes you get the impression, well, look, things are better than they are. And then we look to something so simple as pay and see, well, actually, that gender pay gap still exists in most organizations across Ireland. And, you know, while some are doing phenomenal work, look at OnPost closing that gap, you know, phenomenal work, but that's not true right across the board. So I think there is a need always to be honest about who we are as an organization and look at, well, what can we do and how can we get there? But, you know, for me anyway, training, awareness, let's not just start at our bottom levels in our organization. Training and awareness right up there at the senior levels is important too.
100%. And I suppose, Megan, kind of final question to yourself then, and kind of building on what Mary has said there, because I suppose the thing we always finish with is, what can HR teams do? Because I know a lot of HR teams out there, people would be listening to this, nodding, knowing that it's an issue, but possibly maybe worried about the level of work or cover they have in this area. So I suppose to kind of summarize, Megan, any kind of final words on how to get started or how to just, I suppose, do a couple of foundational pieces to make sure at least you're on the right track with this stuff?
I mean, you start with your, I suppose, start with your policies, establish your policies, have comprehensive recruitment, dignity at work and disciplinary policies, and inform and train your staff on these policies and make sure that they are lived within the organization and become part of the culture, not something that are written and then begin to gather actual dust or virtual dust, depending on the shelf they are sat upon, you know, and identify your training needs as a result, as part of that. See who you need to train and why. And it's a lot. There are a lot of training needs around this, and it can be overwhelming. So make a strategy, strategize, plan. Another basic, I suppose, measure is to bring the topic to the table. Discuss it at senior level, as Mary was saying. Put it on the agenda at your senior management meetings. Make it a conversation. You know, bring it to leadership's attention. Make sure that they know that this is important for your organization. We want to be doing well in this area. We need to be driving, I suppose, we need to be driving this forward across our organizations. You know, and that leadership commitment is going to support diversity and inclusion. It's going to help set that example, you know, advocate for those equal practices and hold kind of individuals accountable for discriminatory behavior. So there's quite a lot to it, but, you know, in starting off, you know, small steps can begin to make a big difference and get you on the right track to ensuring that you're compliant, that not only that you're compliant, because you know what, compliance is only part of it. It's also about your culture and that lived experience of staff, as Mary was saying. And then we're here to help, because they're all our areas of expertise, policy development, training, and even just general advice, picking up the phone and asking, okay, I want to start. Can you point me in the right direction?
100%, a very positive note to end on. And again, we do have more detail on this in this month's webinar, Tackling Workplace Discrimination, same title. That will actually be taking place tomorrow, but it will be available on demand for those who miss it. And again, as Megan and Mary have both said, we do offer a lot of support in this area, so do feel free to pick up the phone. And as you can see there from Mary and Megan's discussion, I mean, a lot of tips, a lot of advice, a lot of specialisms here. So it's a good team to pick up the phone too. So thank you, Mary and Megan, for a very practical, useful, hopefully helpful discussion for a lot of people out there. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. If you are enjoying these episodes, do please feel free to share them with colleagues, friends, and family, especially with a topic like this, where I think we all know it's an issue, but somebody might need the nudge to get going on it. So do please feel free to share episodes like this to really push the agenda forward. And even better, if you can leave us a review on whatever platform you're on, we'd really appreciate that too. They're very helpful. And as always, as we said, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insidehr.ie. Thank you, Megan, and thank you, Mary.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Inside HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insidehr.ie/podcast. That's www.insidehr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.